Do you trust television news? Do you trust? Okay, good.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, June 21st, 2006. Happy summer solstice. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Angela Hancock-Revis.
Coming up on this morning's newscast, a report finds that urban sprawl is bad for your health. A U.S. research group found that 28 states more than doubled their carbon dioxide output, and several federal and local law enforcement agencies have bypassed subpoenas and warrants designed to protect civil liberties to gather information. Portland area weather calls for cloudy with highs in the low 70s.
The Spirit Mountain Casino's success has allowed the Grand Ronde tribe to inject big money into Oregon elections. Gambling profits pay for universal health care for the tribal members, elder housing, pensions, preschool, college scholarships, and yearly checks of nearly $5,000 to each member. And there's enough left over for the tribe to become a big money player in Oregon politics. In the May primary for governor, the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde saturated TV airwaves with ads pummeling Governor Ted Kulongoski for supporting a competing casino proposed in the Columbia Gorge and praising Republican Ron Saxton for opposing that casino. Political analysts say the Grand Ronde's aggressive stance delivered a message beyond the primary. The tribe wants to be viewed as a heavyweight in Oregon politics, much like other tribes across the nation that have been enriched by gambling profits.
As Oregon clamps down on mercury emitted by a Portland General Electric coal-fired power plant in Boardman, it leaves an unregulated Eastern Oregon factory that is far larger source of the toxic compound. This according to the Oregonian. The state's biggest industrial source of airborne mercury is a cement kiln run by a Kansas-based Ash Grove Cement Company in the town of Durkee. Unaffected by federal laws aimed at coal-fired power plants, it released 632 pounds of mercury into the air in 2004, the last year when records are available, compared to 151 pounds emitted by a PGE's facility. Mercury eventually falls out of the air, often far away, contaminating the food chain, including fish in many rivers and lakes. But the cement company and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency say no cost-effective means is available to capture mercury coming from its plant. The EPA never has limited mercury emissions from cement kilns, though it has ordered states to begin doing so for coal plants. That prompted the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality to draft new mercury control rules for the PGE coal plant near Boardman, the only one in Oregon. Activists at a public hearing Monday criticized that proposal, which requires no controls until 2018, as one of the weakest in the nation.
A new report says that urban sprawl is a major health risk for Oregonians. The Sightline Institute in Seattle says that people who live in high-density urban neighborhoods are less likely to be obese or die in a car crash. The Institute, formerly known as Northwest Environment Watch, issues an annual report card on the health of the region. It voted that Vancouver, British Columbia, has the lowest rate of obesity and fatal crashes, but is the most compact urban area of seven Northwest cities evaluated. The report suggests that planning more compact communities could make Northwest cities safer and healthier. Hear more on this report at 7:30 on Locus Focus with Barbara Bernstein.
National parks are increasingly cash-strapped as rising costs outstrip marginal increases in funding. National parks here and across the country are fraying with unfilled jobs, untended campsites, unfixed roads, and uninformed visitors. This from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. Two recent independent studies of the national park system conclude that the treasured playgrounds are suffering. The first, published 2 months ago by the Federal Government Accountability Office, investigated park spending over a four-year period from 2001 to 2005. While funding for the 390-park system increased slightly over that time, inflation and rising costs easily outstripped any gains. And concerns over the park's deteriorating conditions were valid, according to the analysis. The report noted that the parks increasingly have attempted to offset the losses with private fundraising and volunteers, and increases the use of volunteers as obvious upsides and liabilities. One major plus is volunteers tend to be passionate and knowledgeable about the parks. Surveying 37 national parks, a group of 500 former employees found widespread cuts in staffing, unfunded maintenance programs, and slashed seasonal hiring.
The U.S. Public Interest Research Group released an analysis of government data today showing that 28 states more than doubled their carbon dioxide emissions between 1960 and 2001. One major culprit of the spike in emissions, increased combustion of oil to fuel our cars and trucks, which accounted for 40% of the total rise. The report underscores the need for immediate action to avoid a global climate crisis.
Scientists at the Georgia Institute of Technology claim to have created a prototype device able to block digital video cameras from working in a specific area. This from United Press International. The scientists say that the device could be used to stop unwanted use of video or still cameras. It uses off-the-shelf equipment to scan for, find, and neutralize digital cameras by looking for the reflectivity and shape of the image-producing sensors used in digital cameras. The scientists say a digital camera's image sensor, called a CCD, sends light back to its origin rather than scattering it, making it relatively easy to detect and identify video cameras. And once the scanning laser and photo detector locates a video camera, it would flash a thin beam of visible white light directly at the CCD, overwhelming the target camera with light and rendering recorded video unusable. A paper on the developing technology was presented during the UbiComp conference in Tokyo last September.
Numerous federal and local law enforcement agencies have bypassed subpoenas and warrants designed to protect civil liberties and gathered Americans' personal telephone records from private sector data brokers. These brokers, many of whom advertise aggressively on the Internet, have gotten into customer accounts online, tricked phone companies into revealing information, and even acknowledged that their practices violate laws. The law enforcement agencies include offices in the Homeland Security Department and Justice Department, including the FBI and U.S. Marshals Service. The Municipal Police Department in California, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, and Utah. Experts believe hundreds of other departments frequently use such services. Congressional investigators estimated the U.S. government spent $30 million last year buying personal data from private brokers, but that number likely understates the breadth of transactions, since brokers said they rarely charge law enforcement agencies. The police agencies told AP they used the data brokers because it was quicker and easier than subpoenas, and their lawyers believed their actions were lawful. Some agencies, such as Immigration and Customs Enforcement, instructed agents to stop the practice after congressional inquiries.
A civil rights attorney convicted of aiding terrorists last year wants the federal government to reveal whether any warrantless or illegal electronic surveillance was conducted on her or anyone involved in her case. In a court petition filed Monday, Lynn Stewart contends that such an inquiry is necessary to determine whether government surveillance compromised her case. The motion in federal court in New York follows revelations last year that Bush authorized a national security agency to monitor domestic communications without a court approval when one party is overseas and terrorism is suspected. Stewart was convicted in February of 2005 of providing material support to terrorists by releasing the message of a jailed client, Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman. She also was convicted of defrauding the government and making false statements in what many see as a politically motivated trial. Stewart's sentencing was postponed indefinitely in March after she was found to have breast cancer, and she faces as many as 20 years in prison. The U.S. Attorney's Office declined to comment on the court motion.
The Justice Department yesterday won its first trial in the probe of influence peddler Jack Abramoff. It convicted former Bush administration official David Safavian in a case that touched on questionable behavior by members of Congress, Republicans for the most part. A jury found David Safavian had hidden details of his relationship with Abramoff from a General Services Administration ethics lawyer, the GSA's Inspector General's Office, and the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, and had obstructed the Inspector General. Safavian, the GSA's former chief of staff, could face up to 5 years in prison on each of those four counts. He was acquitted of obstructing the Senate probe. The guilty verdict is expected to give a boost to a wide-ranging federal investigation that includes lawmakers, their aides, and members of the Bush administration. In Miami, meanwhile, a judge granted Abramoff and ex-business partner Adam Kidan another 3 months before they must begin serving prison sentences for fraud convictions stemming from the purchase of a gambling boat fleet. Abramoff also faces sentencing in Washington on federal charges of conspiracy, tax evasion, and mail fraud. The delay will give the two more time to cooperate with investigators. This, according to The Guardian.
Woo! to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you've got to let me know.
And according to the BBC and Ross story, Dan Rather is to leave the channel he has worked at for 44 years for a position at a little watch cable channel. CBS announced yesterday that Rather would be leaving the channel where he hosted the evening news for 24 years until he was more or less forced out last year. In September of 2004, however, he had the singular courage to introduce and then defend a report questioning George Bush's National Guard service during the Vietnam War. In a release issued today by his agent, Rather fired back at CBS News. The release reads as follows. My departure before the term of my contract represents CBS's final acknowledgement after a protracted struggle that they had not lived up to their obligation to allow me to do substantive work there. As for their offers of a future with only an office but no assignments, it just isn't in me to sit around doing nothing. So I will do the work I love elsewhere, and I look forward to sharing details about that soon.
George W. Bush is in Austria meeting with EU leaders at a summit that could be overshadowed by calls for the closure of Guantanamo Bay prison camp, this from the BBC. Austrian Chancellor Wolfgang Schussel, who is hosting the meeting in Vienna, has made it clear he will press Bush to shut down the prison camp in Cuba. Austria, which holds the EU's rotating presidency, said last week that the suicides of three detainees at Guantanamo emphasized the need to close the prison camp. For his part, Bush is expected to urge the European leaders to push on with the sanctions against Iran. The White House said the meeting would be a chance to reaffirm strong ties. Apart from Guantanamo, European officials say there will be commitments to work together on a number of other issues. Continuing trade differences between Europe and the U.S. are unlikely to be resolved, though, and EU leaders will be pushing Bush to extend visa-free entry to the U.S. for the 11 member states not covered by the waiver scheme. North Korea's reported plans to test a long-range ballistic missile are also likely to be discussed. Bush was met in Vienna by about 1,000 people marching through the city protesting the summit as it began, carrying banners reading "World's Number One Terrorist" and chanting "We will fight Bush."
And 10 years after U.S. President Bill Clinton declared the country would aggressively pursue an international agreement to ban the use, stockpiling, production, and transfer of anti-personnel landmines, the U.S. has moved no closer to eliminating the weapons and is in fact developing new types of mines. According to the International Campaign to Ban Landmines, budget documents submitted to Congress in 2005 show that the Pentagon is preparing for development of new types of anti-personnel mines called spiders. Spider landmines differ from conventional mines because they are designed to detonate in a variety of ways. Spider mines can explode either through command detonation, where a human operator determines when the mine will explode, or through conventional victim activation, where a victim detonates the weapon by stepping on or picking up the landmine. An operator would have the ability to turn the switch one way for command detonation and the other way for victim detonation. With the flip of a switch, Spider would become a conventional victim-activated anti-personnel mine that cannot tell the difference between the boot of a soldier and the foot of a child. According to the group Human Rights Watch, landmine kills or would be an estimated 26,000 people a year, most of them civilians.
According to DNAIndia.com, the U.S. Department of Defense has activated its new ground-based interceptor missile defense system amid North Korea's plans to test fire a long-range missile. A report yesterday said that the U.S. already has two Aegis warships patrolling the waters off North Korea as a part of the defense system. The system includes 11 long-range interceptor missiles, including 9 deployed at Fort Greely, Alaska, and 2 at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. The system has been switched from the test to the operational mode during the last 2 weeks, the Washington Times reported, quoting unnamed officials. And intelligence officials said preparation for the test firing are to the point where a launch could take place within several days to a month. Senior Bush administration officials has been quoted by the paper as saying that an option being considered would be to shoot down the North Korean missiles. But the Pentagon has said very little officially on North Korea and has declined comment on whether the interceptor system is in an operational mode. The White House has refused to speculate on whether the North Korean missile would be shot down. The Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, has said that any launch of missile would be taken with utmost seriousness and indeed a provocative act.
And North Korea said it wants direct talks with the United States over its apparent plans to test fire a long-range missile, a day after the country issued a statement in which it declared its right to carry out the launch. The U.S. and Japan have said they could consider sanctions against North Korea if it goes ahead, and Washington was weighing down responses that include attempting to shoot down the missile. North Korea said in comments published today that its self-imposed moratorium on testing long-range missiles from 1999 no longer applies because it's not in direct dialogue with Washington, suggesting it would hold off any launch if Washington agreed to new talks. Pyongyang has consistently pressed for direct dialogue with the United States, while Washington insists it will only speak to the North at the Six Nations nuclear talks. The North has refused to return to those nuclear talks since November because of a U.S. claim of illicit financial activity in the country. The U.S. Ambassador to Japan, Thomas Schiffer, called on Pyongyang to return to the six-party talks but did not address the possibility of bilateral negotiations. He also said the United States has means of responding to a North Korean missile test that it didn't have the last time Pyongyang carried out a launch in 1998 and is considering all options. Schiffer didn't specify what those options were, but defense officials in Washington told the AP that the White House was weighing down responses to a missile launch that could include attempting to shoot it down while in flight over the Pacific. North Korea imposed a missile moratorium in 1999 amid friendlier relations with the United States. During a 2002 summit with Japan, North Korea leader Kim Jong-il signed an agreement to extend the moratorium until at least 2003 and refrained the launch ban at another summit in 2004.
The European Union is considering how to phase out animal testing. The European Commission and the chemicals and pharmaceuticals industries have presented a new plan to voluntarily reduce and eventually replace the need for animal testing. The plan also sets standards for cosmetic makers who want to use the label not tested on animals. The EU Commissioner for Science and Research says officials want to take advantage of research to offer consumers a greater choice of products that aren't tested on animals. Johnson & Johnson and L'Oreal are among the companies that have already signed on.
And the world's wealthiest continue to grow richer, with research showing that there are now nearly 9 million millionaires around the world. Nearly 9 million people held $1 million in assets in 2005, according to investment bank Merrill Lynch and consultants Capgemini. Between them, global millionaires owned $33.3 trillion in net assets. South Korea saw the biggest rise in millionaires last year, with their rank swelling by 21%. In contrast, the number of new U.S. millionaires slowed as high oil prices and rising interest rates hit stock market returns. The Global Millionaires Club is now larger than the entire population of Switzerland and is fast approaching that of Sweden. Membership of the most exclusive club of multimillionaires, dubbed ultra-high net worth individuals, increased by 10% last year. This from the BBC.
One of Saddam Hussein's lawyers has been killed after being abducted from his home by men wearing police uniforms in Baghdad. Khamis al-Obaidi, who represented Saddam and his half-brother Barzan Ibrahim in their 8-month-old trial, was abducted from his house at 7 a.m., said Saddam's top lawyer. His body was found shot to death on a street near the Shiite slum of Sadr City. Saddam's top lawyer blamed the Interior Ministry, which Sunnis have alleged is infiltrated by so-called Shiite death squads. We strongly condemn this act, and we condemn the killings done by the Interior Ministry forces against Iraqis, he said, adding that U.S.-led forces also bore responsibility because the war had allowed Shiite militias to gain influence in Iraq. A dozen masked gunmen abducted Saddam's defense lawyer from his Baghdad office the day after the trial's opening session in October. His body was found the next day with two bullets in his head. Nearly 3 weeks later, defense lawyer Adel El-Zubaydi was assassinated in a brazen daylight ambush in Baghdad. A colleague who was wounded fled the country. The defense has asked Iraq authorities for increased protection and threatened to boycott the trial unless this was provided.
And the U.S. military says that southern Afghanistan will see significant fighting for several months as coalition troops push ahead with a major offensive against the Taliban. The warning came a day after coalition and Afghan forces raided a Taliban meeting in the southern Helmand province, killing 20 people. Separately, U.S. soldiers fired on an unmarked police car at the checkpoint in eastern Kunar province, killing three policemen and wounding three. The U.S. military says it regrets the incident. Operation Mountain Thrust began in last week with more than 10,000 Afghan, British, Canadian, and American troops deploying throughout four southern provinces in the largest military operation since the Taliban regime was ousted by U.S.-led forces in 2001. More than 600 people, including civilians, have been killed in the past month as insurgents have launched their deadliest campaign of violence in years. At least 10 coalition soldiers have been killed in combat since mid-May. The coalition offensive is timed to coincide with the upcoming transfer of command in the south this summer from U.S.-led forces to the NATO-led International Security Assistance Force.
An Israeli missile aimed at militants has killed three young Palestinians in a refugee camp. Israeli aircraft fired a missile at a car in the crowded Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza Strip today, but it missed the car it was aimed at. Hospital officials say it killed a 5-year-old boy and his 7-year-old sister. A 16-year-old girl has also died of her wounds. 8 other people were injured in the blast. The Israeli army says it regrets any civilian casualties. Israel's Channel 2 TV has called it another failed assassination attempt, and again, innocent civilians were hit. The strike is clouding prospects for a possible meeting between Israeli and Palestinian leaders later this week when they attend the same breakfast in Jordan.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has opposed a deployment of international troops in his country. Al-Bashir said Sudan would not be recolonized. The UN is considering sending peacemakers to Sudan's Darfur region to supplement African Union troops. A report by the International Crisis Group on Monday said a UN peace force was urgently needed in Darfur. But Bashir said there would be no such force in Sudan, according to reports in state media. South African President Thabo Mbeki is currently in Sudan on a one-day visit, with peace moves in Darfur on the agenda. The ICG warned that the current peace agreement over Darfur had little chance of bringing stability unless the parties comply strictly to the international community acts decisively to support the peacekeeping mission. The peace plan was signed by the government and one rebel faction in Nigeria in May. This from the BBC.
Liberian ex-president Charles Taylor has arrived in the Netherlands, where he is to be tried on war crimes charges. For security reasons, the unbacked tribunal in Sierra Leone moved his trial to The Hague from Freetown, where he has been in jail since his capture. Taylor faces 11 charges after allegedly backing rebels in the decade-long Sierra Leone civil war. Last week, the United Kingdom offered to host any jail term he may serve, paving the way for his transfer. The government of the Netherlands agreed Mr. Taylor's trial could take place there as long as he is imprisoned in another country if he was convicted. The trial is due to take place in the facilities of the International Criminal Court in The Hague, but legal officials assigned to the special court for Sierra Leone will be responsible for its conduct. Taylor is accused of funding Sierra Leone's former rebels, the Revolutionary United Front, by selling diamonds on their behalf and buying weapons for them. This from the BBC.
10 Greenpeace activists have been detained while attempting to stage a protest at the International Whaling Commission, or IWC's annual meeting. They plan to build a whale graveyard in protest at Japan's hunting in Antarctic waters, which it says is for scientific research. Greenpeace says anti-whaling countries have been too quiet on the issue. Protests and activism were largely absent during the first 4 days of this meeting, but as the final day opened, Greenpeace sprang into action. The ship Arctic Sunrise, which spent the 2005-2006 Antarctic whaling season harassing Japanese vessels in the Southern Ocean, appeared off the coast outside the conference hotel. Police arrived within minutes, some carrying guns, and detained the five plus another five activists who had arrived from the conference center. European and South American delegates told BBC News they now plan to recruit more anti-whaling countries into the organization. This from the BBC.
A leading Indian activist at the World Urban Forum in Vancouver has lashed out at such conferences. Former slum dweller Jachin Arputhum said they do little better than the lives of the poor. Arputhum criticized the forum's location and delegates, who he said were more keen on writing reports than ending poverty. Thousands of experts, politicians, and activists are meeting to discuss the world's growing urban problems. Organizers say the forum is a way of exchanging ideas and raising awareness. Arputhum, president of India's National Slum Dwellers Federation, said the amount of time and money spent on this World Urban Forum and how many consultants have been employed for carrying out this kind of conference. He said international gatherings like the Vancouver meeting should be held in cities like Mumbai or Cairo, among urban poor whose problems are being debated. Arputhum also criticized the United Nations for failing to stop forced evictions of poor city dwellers by private developers and government-sponsored aid programs. This from the BBC. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, June 21st, 2006. Today's editor is Brian Smith. Our engineer is Boone Revis. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Angela Hancock Revis.
And I'm Brian Smith.
We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge on translator K246AA, and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley on translator K220HR. If you would like to volunteer in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or email amnews@kbu.org. Portland area weather calls for clouds with highs in the low 70s.